We shall begin the puja now. Okay, come forward and offer the tray. Come, Jajai, come. You hold this. You bring this whole tray up. Then we offer together. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then pass it back. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 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 Is it hot? No, okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 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 Carry properly. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 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 Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. You all can be seated. Then we'll commence with the pre-puja chanting. Compose yourself. Develop the sadha, the faith. Then virya. After that, we will do the puja chanting. Yeah. We will chant the salutation to Buddha, Kuan Yin, all the various grouping. Then after that, we will chant the salutation to the Triple Gem. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. 那么本师释迦牟尼佛，那么观世音菩萨，那么观世音菩萨，那么观世音菩萨，那么普贤菩萨，那么普贤菩萨，那么普贤菩萨，那么佛菩萨，那么佛菩萨，那么佛菩萨。阿拉汉萨玛萨布多巴嘎瓦布当巴嘎万当阿比瓦迪米。娑迦陀巴嘎瓦塔达摩达曼那玛萨米。สุปัตติปันโนภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆสังฆังนะมามิโอเค turn to page 4 of the chanting book Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma SambuddhassaBuddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami,Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikkhapadang SamadhiyamiMusawada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami Suramiraya Majjhapamadatthana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami We will now chant the Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganda Sarapaditena.Dipena tamadangsina Tiloka dipang sambuddhang Pujayami tamonudang Ganda sambar yutena Dopenahang suganghina Pujaye pujaniyangtang Puja bhajanamuttamangVanna Ganda Guno Petang Etang Kasuma Santatin Pujayami Munindasa Siri Pada Sarorohe Pujemi Buddhang Kasumena Nena Punnena Matena Cha Hotu Mokhang
ปูปังมิลายะติยะตาอิดังเมคายโยตัตตายะติวินาสบาวังอาดิวาเสตุโนบันเตปานิยังปาริคาปิตังอนุกังปังอุปาดายะปาติกังหาตุมุตตมัง
Okay, turn to page 18, the last page. We will do the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Understanding the significance of offering of light, we shall make the following aspiration. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind.And help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Understanding the significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense.May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dhanaparami of generosity and the fruit of our karma,so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya,leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of all this offering, may our spiritual faculties of Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings.May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the affinity, condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay. You can be seated, then maintain some form of attention. Then we can start our meditation.Everybody has been here before, so no need to give new instruction. Okay, I will off the light. Yeah. Then after that, you can start your meditation. For those who already know how to meditate, you can straight away proceed with your meditation. For those who still need to develop the training of your mind, then you need to do whatever appropriate skillful means that you have developed to train your mind. Those who still like to do the mind sweeping method to stabilize your spiritual faculty, you can do it. So spiritual faculties are very important. So you can train your mind to be quiet, peaceful and silent. It will develop sati, the silent mind. So mind sweeping method is a very good skillful means to train the mind to be peaceful and quiet. Where it just feels relaxed, it doesn't think anymore. This will help you overcome whatever heedless thinking that is still going on within your mind state, especially so in daily life. For those who already develop the ability to be heedful most of the time in the midst of life, then you can straight away silent and go into the meditation. But for those who new, still need to train, then you start with mind sweeping method, combine with metta. Then later on, after you have developed the ability to be quiet and peaceful, you can straight away develop the anapanasati to stabilize it, mindfulness of the in and out breath, or any skillful means, meditation object, method or technique that you are familiar with, so that you can be mindful of that object of meditation most of the time. When your mindfulness has developed until it's very stable, then you continue to relax into it. As you relax into it, it will become more and more calm, more and more peaceful. When there is sati, there is no thought. And when you can stabilize that sati, piti will arise. Piti born of a trained mind in sati will arise. This is what they call spiritual calmness, spiritual peace, or spiritual rapture. It is a type of meditative peace that arises through the mind that is trained in sati without thought. Then as you continue to relax into it, it will stabilize. Then it becomes more refined. Then piti can transform into sukha. Sukha is a type of spiritual bliss. It has gone beyond spiritual calmness. It has reached a state of very refined type of mind state. And when you can go through that state, the mind becomes so blissful. So that bliss, depending on your ability to train this mind, it will arise in different form for different people. And that type of bliss is not an enlightenment factor. So you need to be careful. But when it arises, do not fear it. Do not be scared of it. Just allow it to be, relaxed into it and experience it. Then when you experience it, you have to be very careful because there is a tendency to want it repeated or attachment to it because it is so blissful and that state is so wonderful. But meditation is not about developing inner peace and inner bliss, although it comes as a byproduct of the training. For these are still conditioned states that will fade away when conditions cease to be. All of meditation is leading towards wisdom, leading towards the ability to insight into phenomena, to realize the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self. So that is the main purpose and intent. So knowing that, understanding that, we shall not abide in just peace and bliss. We should relax deep into it to allow this peace, inner calmness leading to inner bliss, to continue to transform until the mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, and very still. And then it becomes paucity. Paucity is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind, the true mind that has got no activity. It's just stillness. It's just silent. If you can stabilize your mind that way, then your mind will enter sati. And when your mind enters sati, it is already mindful. You don't have to train to be mindful anymore. Then after that, when you can bring forth this paucity or tranquility state of mind into your daily life, you will be able to develop the important quality of apamada or heedfulness that the Buddha talked about. You can be heedful throughout the day. Means throughout the day, every moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel or think, you see and perceive with mindfulness, your mind becomes very different. Such a mind is heedful. It can see clearly everything that is going on in life, all that is happening within our own form and mind. Then it can also understand all of truth and reality within mind, within the reality, within life itself. This is the meditative mind that can truly understand the Dhamma. So paucity is an enlightenment factor and is a very important quality. When your mind becomes so quiet, so peaceful and so subtle until there is no movement, until all of your meditation object becomes so quiet, so subtle, like no more breathing or no more activity, that means you have already developed the meditative mind that is aware. So when that happens, you just relax into it, silent everything and don't try to know. Then whatever subtle movement may be your breath or any object of meditation, it will become very clear to you again. Your sati has reached another refined level where it will be able to understand all this movement. It becomes very sensitive. When that happens, you just silent, relax, and just maintain awareness. Then after that, whatever that arises, dependent on contact of mind with your sense bases, all of your mental activity and movement, you will start to understand them very clearly. In the midst of life, in the midst of activity, in the midst of whatever you do, you will start to see things clearly, without distraction. That silent mind that is in sati is very different, is very heedful, is very mindful. And this will allow you to develop the understanding of life and the Buddha Dhamma. All of the Buddha's essential Dhamma that he has taught us, you will start to witness them within your own form and mind, within life itself. This is what meditation is all about. So ultimately, it's training your mind to be heedful. Then after that, use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Use it to insight into phenomena, to realize the understanding of the truth, to realize the universal characteristics of impermanent suffering state and non-self. Okay, with that, I will let you continue your meditation. Then I will ring the bell in about 15 minutes time. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those that are not, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. We shall now commence with our invocation to the devas. Turn to page 6 of your chanting book. I will read to you all the English translation. Invocation to the devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Samanta Chakavalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhalmang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokalang Dhamma Svanankalo Ayang Bandata Dhamma Svanankalo Ayang Bandata Dhamma Svanankalo Ayang Bandata Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho Vichacharana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sandittiko Akaliko Ehi Pasiko Opanaiko Pachatang Veditatbo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakkineyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang Punyang Ketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, we shall pay respect to Triple Jack. Bedang Pujayami. Damang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you can relax yourself, maintain some form of attention, and be seated. Then we will continue with our sharing. Turn to the first page to read the verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay. Then we shall continue from where we stop. Where did we stop the last time? Page 24, is it? Correct, huh? Correct, not? Yeah, end of 23, huh? So now 24, Okay. The Jeta group belongs to King Pasenanji's son, Prince Jeta, whose name is War Victor, was given him in commemoration of King Pasenanji's victory in a war with the neighboring country, which occurred on the day his son was born. So this is a little bit of a history behind. Then the benefactor of orphans and the solitary refers to the Indian philanthropy of that time, who was much like King Wen of the Chao dynasty in China. King Wen's first goal was to benefit widows, orphans and the solitary, meaning elderly, childless couple. His government was beneficent and humane, and tend solely to the good of the country. The benefactor mentioned here in the sutra was an elderly named Sudatta. Good benefactor, one of King Pasenanji's great minister. The flower garden belongs to Prince Jeta until Sudatta bought it for the exorbitant price of 1 square inch of gold for every square inch of ground. The elder Sudatta made the purchase following his invitation to the Buddha to come to Sarvati to spread or spoke the Dhamma. The following are the events which resulted in his purchase of the Jetavana group. I think under Theravada Sutta, this person's name is Ananda Pindika, if I'm not wrong. It all began when Sudatta went to Rajagaha on business and stayed with a friend named how come Chinese name? Santanu. One night during his visit to Santanu's house, his friend arose in the middle of the night and began to decorate his home. He brought out areas of adornment and arranged them to perfection, working on into the night until his home was most elegant. The elder Sudatta heard the commotion and arose to see what was happening. "Friend, what is the great occasion for making your house so splendid? Have you invited the king? Is someone in your family to be married? Why all the preparation? It is not for the king. It is not the king I'm expecting, or a wedding. I have invited the Buddha to come to my house to receive a vegetarian offering," replied his friend. Sudatta had never before heard of the Buddha,
And when his friend spoke the name, all the hair on his body stood on end. See, those who have affinity, the moment they hear the name, all the body stood, the hair on the body, on his body stood on end. Strange, he thought. Who is the Buddha? He wondered. The elder Santano said, "The Buddha is the son of King Suddhodana. He cast aside his inheritance of the throne in order to live the home life and practice the way. He cultivated for 6 years in the Himalayas, and afterwards under the Bodhi tree, he saw a star one evening and was enlightened to the way and became a Buddha or Sammasambuddha. The elder Siddhartha's foundation of good roots caused him immediately to voice his resolve to see the Buddha. His profound sincerity so moved Sakyamuni Buddha." See, again, sincerity. "Who was staying in the bamboo grove, Jeta grove, about 60 or 70 miles southeast of Rajagaha, that he emitted a light to guide Siddhartha. Seeing the light, Siddhartha thought it was dawn and eagerly dressed and set out. It was actually in the middle of the night, and the city gates had not yet been opened. But when the elder arrived at the city wall, the gate, due to the Buddha's spiritual penetration, were opened, and he passed through them and proceeded on his way to see the Buddha. Siddhartha followed the directions given to him by his friend and was guided by the Buddha's light. When he arrived at the Vihara, he didn't know the correct procedure for greeting the Buddha. Again, his deep sincerity evoked a response, and four devas or gods transformed into bhikkhu, circumambulated the Buddha three times to the right, went before the honored one, bowed three times, kneeled, placed their palms together, and made their inquiries. The elder Siddhartha followed their example and then kneeled before the Buddha, who rubbed his crown and said, 'Why have you come?' Siddhartha simply said, 'Buddha, you are too good. I have never seen a Buddha before, and now I don't want to leave you. Will you come and live near my home?' The Buddha agreed, saying, 'All right, but do you have a place?' The 1,250 disciples who constantly accompany me will need to be fed and housed. Do you have accommodation large enough for all of us?'" So that was the question the Buddha posed to Siddhartha. Then Siddhartha replied, "I will find a place," promised the elder. And he returned home to begin an extensive search for an area, which ended when he saw Prince Jeta's flower garden. It was perfect in every respect, affording a good view, yet convenient to the city proper. The grounds themselves were charged with efficacious energy. Everything about it was first rate, except that it belongs to the prince. Wondering how he would ever be able to buy it, Siddhartha sent a messenger to make an offer. "He has so much money, he thinks he can buy my flower garden?" laughed the prince in amazement. "Very well," said in jest. "If he covers it completely with gold coin, I will sell it to him. That is my price." Prince Jeta was assuming that the elder Siddhartha could not possibly afford ground which cost their area in gold. Never did he guess that Siddhartha's money and his desire to hear the Dhamma both were adequate. The elder took gold coins from his family storehouse and covered Prince Jeta's garden. Prince Jeta was outraged. "Take back your coin. I have no intention of selling," it was just a joke. It never occurred to me you would actually be willing to pay such a price. My garden can't be bought for any amount. The elder quietly replied, now you say you won't sell? You are heir to the throne, and an emperor's word should be reliable. A king doesn't lie or speak recklessly. You had better sell, because if people can't trust your word now, why should they believe you after you assume the throne? The prince recognized his predicament. Very well, he said, since you use gold coin to cover it, you have purchased the ground. But you did not cover the tree, so the garden is yours, offering to the Buddha, and the tree are mine. Wow, very wise guy, huh? Are my offering. Do you have anything further to say? The elder considered this and realized that it had principle. It was true that the top of the tree has not been covered with gold, and if he refused to consent, the prince would chop them down, and then the garden would be far less beautiful. All right, we will divide it. Therefore, it was called Jeta Grove. Oh, no wonder, huh? Jeta is a prince named Jetavana Grove. In the gardens of the benefactor of orphans and solitary. The prince's name is mentioned first since he was royalty, and elder Siddhanta, known as Ananda Pindika. Are there? This is the name, huh? Ananda Pindika. Huh? They go and spell it as Ananda Pindada. It's Pindika, huh? Not Pindada. Pindika. The benefactor of orphanage and the solitary who held a ministerial post in the court is mentioned second. Yeah. So now you understand why when it get translated into Mahayana, sometimes a lot of things run a little bit. The pronunciation also run, the spelling also run, and many things run. But it is a very natural process as things get passed down. Because during the ancient days, this was passed down via words of mouth. There was no writing at that time. Then there was no technology like what we have now. We had recording, we have computers, and many things can be authentified with nowadays advancement in technology. So if during the Buddha's time, if they had all this, we wouldn't be arguing too much. We can just listen to what he said. And all this would have been preserved. But it's meant to be. Therefore, it is the way it is. Okay, I will continue. Therefore, it is called the Jeta Grove, in the garden of the benefactor of orphans and solitary. So we have gone through this one. The prince name is mentioned first since he was royalty, and the elder Siddhartha, known as Ananda Pindika, the benefactor of orphanage, of orphans and solitary, who held a ministerial post in the court, is mentioned second. Now you start to understand how Ananda Pindika can have so much wealth, because even after he becomes so wealthy, what did he do? He did a lot of charity. He liked to set up homes for orphanage and solitary. In the olden days, solitary means single parents. Then he also do a lot of wholesomeness. Like he offered this whole piece of land that cost him so much gold coin to Sakyamuni Buddha and his Sangha. And this type of parami, is a field of merits that is immeasurable. You cannot imagine. And he was done with such understanding and faith. That's why he will continue to be very, very wealthy. I used to joke, could it be that this Ananda Pindika now become Ananda Krishnan? Same name,
quite similar. Then the son, you see, Ananda Krishna's son, becomes Sripanyo. So also Buddhist root. Okay, we go on. Together with a gathering of great bhikkhu, after Sakyamuni Buddha realized Buddhahood, he went first to the Deer Park to cross over the five ascetic or bhikkhu that follow him, including Kondanya. Then he contemplated and saw the Uruvila Kashyapa brothers, who had a large following of disciples, could be converted. Sakyamuni Buddha was an elder Sanghan and had the manner of a high master. But when he arrived to pay his visit, Uruvila Kashyapa did not acknowledge him with respect because he thought, "I am the leader of many men. Everyone call me the worthy one." Unaware of the Buddha's background, he unceremoniously launched into an investigation of Dhamma with him. Actually, debate. Soon, however, he realized what he had confronted, for no matter what he said, he never managed to have the last word. He could not defeat the Buddha in debate. It's a debate. Having failed with words, he resorted to his spiritual power as a fire worshipper. With the intention of burning the Buddha, he conjured up a great fire. His strength was impressive, but the fire failed to touch the Buddha, and in fact veiled back towards Kashyapa himself, who on the verge of being burned alive was helpless and immediately surrendered to the Buddha. So this was the story, how they get converted. Uruvela had 500 disciples and his brother had 250, all of whom took refuge with the Buddha, bringing the total number of disciples to 1,005. Later, the Buddha converted Sariputta and Mahamoggallana. These are the top two disciples of Sakyamuni Buddha, who had 100 disciples each. When they took refuge, the Buddha's disciple amount to 1,205 in all. Yasa, the son of an elder, and his disciple also took refuge with the Buddha. This actually make up a total of 1,255 disciples who were the bhikkhu's constant followers. Sutra text round off the number to 1,250. So this is a bit of a history. Then we go on. At that time, has five meanings. It was a time when the Buddha wanted to speak, began to speak, and was speaking. These are the five meanings attribute when they use the word at that time. The second meaning, it was the time which break up the views of outside way. Some outside way deny the existence of past, present and future. At that time means the explanation had occurred in the past, is occurring in the present and will occur in the future. These words therefore separate Buddha Dharma from the Dharma of outside way. It was the time of planting seeds. Seeds that are planted and nourished will grow. Uncultivated seeds will perish. This one is a very important understanding. The third meaning. Uncultivated seeds will perish. So you make sure you do your cultivation well. If one has developed good causes in past life, but does not cultivate that fruit further in this life, he will have roots that wither and die. If these good roots are continually cared for, they will bear further fruits. So if you have roots that are sufficiently good to allow you to hear the Dhamma or the Sutta lectures, do not just come occasionally. Come as often as possible.
the more you come, the deeper your roots will grow. So these are the advice, and it's the third meaning. The fourth meaning is, it was the time to listen to Sutta, see, at that time, meaning very deep. That does not mean just listening once or twice. It means listening regularly for more. For the more you hear, the more you understand. In listening to Sutta, three conditions must be fulfilled. This one very important. A lot of people don't understand this. The three conditions that must be fulfilled is, the first one is, the person who share or who proclaim this Dhamma, he must be a true teacher. Then the second condition is, the teaching must also be the true teaching. Then the third condition is, you really, really listen attentively to understand it. That's why it's called true study. You listen attentively. With only one or two of these conditions fulfilled, study is useless. For instance, if you have true teaching and truth, if you have true teaching and what is truly study? Now I understand. But like a true teacher, then you cannot understand that teaching. All three conditions must be met for cultivation to succeed. You understand that part or not? Even the teaching is true, authentic from the Buddha, then you really truly study it. But you don't have a real Dhamma master or teacher who can explain it. I tell you, you catch no ball unless you have good roots from the past. Understand? That's why he say, without the true teacher, you cannot understand that teaching. All the conditions must be met for cultivation to succeed. Then the last meaning is, it was the time when the Buddha wanted to speak the Dhamma and beings wanted to listen. The Buddha wished to speak in this way. In the way beings want to listen. The Buddha and living beings are not two. One high and the other low. They are equal. So this is the meaning. So now he is going slowly into the sutta. Where the sutta start with at one time or at that time. Then world-honored one, the meaning is one of the 10 special names of the Buddha. When the Buddha descend from the palace in the Tusita heaven into the realm of the living beings or human beings and was born from the right side, through the ribs of his mother Maya, he immediately took 7 steps. Then with one hand pointing to heaven and one hand pointing to earth, he said, above heaven and below heaven, I alone am the honored one. When he had finished speaking, 9 dragons brought water to bathe his body. Oh, no wonder you are going to Putosana. We are going to Ling San Ta Fo. You will witness this majestic happening. Exactly that time, about 4:15 it seems. They will show it to you, this one, this event. The 9 dragon. And it cost them, how much? 20,000 yuan or 10,000 yuan. 12,000 yuan. To show you one performance. So this is how that thing come about, because it's in the sutta. Thus the Buddha is known as the world-honored one. World refer not only to the worldly, but to the world transcending. For all realms, both mundane and transcendental or supramundane, honored, reveled, and bowed to the world-honored one. So this is the meaning of this word, world-honored one. You know what is Tusita heaven, isn't it? Is one of the deva realms above Tavatinsa.
after the four heavenly realms, Chattu Maharaja, that one very difficult to pronounce, very long word, or the four Deva, they call it the Si Da Jin Gang, the four what? I know, but in Mandarin, what they call the four? Si Da Jin Gang. Yeah, these are the four heavenly king. Now I remember the word four heavenly king. They take charge of the four direction of the what they call heavens. The first Dhamma realm. Then after that is Tavatinsa, King Saka. They call it the 33 gods. Then after that, if I'm not wrong, is the Sita heaven. So many believe, especially Buddhists, that before you become the Sammasambuddha, your last birth will be into Sita heaven. But my second last teacher told me not necessary. Not necessary. Because she came to know one case where the last birth was not there, somewhere else. So all this, we no need to argue. When you have the ability to become Sammasambuddha, you will know. Because there is a choice where they want to have their last birth. Okay. Then we move on. The mention of mealtime clearly showed that the Buddha, like ordinary people, still eat and drink. When it was time to eat, the world-honored one put on his robe. There are three robes worn by the member of the Sangha. So now we learn a little bit about the three pieces that form the monk's robe. Antavasa, the five-piece robe, is a work robe. It is made of a pattern of five stripes, each of which contains two pieces, one long and one short. After the anta, you have the utta, uttara sangha, the seven-piece robe, is worn for ceremony and when listening to Dhamma. Then you have the third piece is the Sangati, also called the perfect robe or great robe. It's comprised of up to 108 pieces of 25 stripes. Each piece in the robe represents a field, and so they are also called field of blessings robe. Member of the Sangha wear the Sangati when receiving offerings from lay people, who thereby plant fields of blessings. When putting on the robe, a verse is recited. We say, good indeed is the liberation cloth, unsurpassed field of blessing robe. This robe is worn when lecturing sutta and speaking Dhamma from the high seat, when accepting of offering of pure food from the king or rulers of a country, and when not begging for food, when going for alms round. So this is a bit of a understanding of the significance of this robe. But here, if I'm not wrong, they refer to the Mahayana robe, mainly Mahayana robe. Theravada, I believe, if I'm not wrong, I heard of this word before, Sangati. Sangati is the three piece, I think. Okay, we turn the next page, page 30. Mealtime was not a casual affair for the Buddha, as it is for lazy people who sleep until time to eat and then get up and wait for someone to prepare the food and serve it to them. Even though the Buddha had realized Buddhahood with his spiritual penetration and wonderful function, at mealtime he still put on his robe and took up his bowl. The bowl referred to the Sanskrit word of patra, which translates as the vessel or appropriate size, implying that this bowl will hold enough to satisfy one's need. Sakyamuni Buddha was given his bowl by the four heavenly king, who manifested to present it to him in person. This one, is it in the Theravada Sutta? I haven't heard of this. The butt of the Buddha was presented by the four heavenly king. Anybody who have read about this in the Theravada Sutta? Nobody. Never mind. This I. That Mahayana seems to have more information. Okay, we go on. He took his bowl and entered the great city of Savatthi, not back for food, for alms round. Member of the Sangha goes for alms round for food in order to give living beings an opportunity to plant the seeds or the field of merits in the field of blessings. Because living being did not know how, did not know about going before the triple gem to plant blessings. The Sangha member went to the living beings by entering the city for alms round from door to door, neither by passing the poor for alms round from the rich, nor bypassing the rich for alms round for the poor. Unlike Subhuti, who exclusively goes for alms round from the wealthy. See, different monk got different preference. During the time of the Buddha, it says Kassapa do the reverse of Subhuti. He like to benefit the poor. He always go pindapat at the poor village. Whereas this Subhuti, he likes to exclusively goes for alms round from the wealthy. The Buddha reprimanded his two disciples, Subhuti and Great Kassapa, because these two got certain very weird character on her, for their manner of alms round. First, actually not scholar, reprimand Subhuti for thinking wealthy people have money because in former life, they foster merits and virtue. If I don't beg from them, if I don't go for alms round from them and give them the opportunity to plant further blessing, then next life they will be poor. They will not continue to be wealthy and honored. So Subhuti only goes for alms round from the rich. However, wealthy people eat good food. Although he said it was to help them plant blessing so they could continue to be wealthy in future life. That's Sanhua say, I believe that in actuality, Subhuti like to eat good food. And that's why he goes for alms round from the rich, because you get better food. That is what I said. But perhaps Subhuti was not like the rest of us, who constantly think about eating well. It is true that he wants to help them continue their blessing. If you can understand, both these two disciples are arahant. No? Understand? No? The way I explain it will be different. You all want to try to explain how come they are so strange in their outlook or preference when they go for pindapat. What do you think? Anybody want to try? Very good. Pamsuri, you give it a try. Very good. Take the mic. Polai, pass it. It's okay.
Good evening, Ratio. Can I explain it in Mandarin? I heard it something like this. It's actually 一个是代表词，一个是代表杯。
Oh, okay.
那词是锦上添花，杯是雪中送炭。
Oh, okay.
I think I understand it like this.
Oh, okay.
It's like the rich one, they rejoice. They rejoice, the rich one have to have the wealth to is rejoicing. And the one begging from the poorer family, they have compassion.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this could be one of the way to explain. Very good try, Sadhu. That's why Dhamma is not rigid, understand? It depends on how you understand. Because to me, these two are arahant. They got no more delusion, no more ignorant. And they have their reason for doing things. Yeah. That's why even arahant, they got their, what they call, specific behavior, character. When they are young, there are certain character that is already, I should say, part of their conditioning from the past. It seems during the Buddha's time, there was one arahant also. He liked to jump around, walk and jump around. He doesn't like formality. He doesn't like to walk like that and hosting like very serious. He don't do that. Then there are certain arahant who like different thing. Like Qigong, you know that Qigong. He also don't like to be clean very untidy Then he when you ask him to help and cure, he go and rub the lucky and give it to you and say, you mix the water, you will recall. So he got very strange here. Then he very untidy Then sometimes the legend say he likes to eat this cow yolk, dog meat with the wine and all thing. So different arahant, they got different character. To me, they already arahant means they got no more delusion. So my understanding is, I will explain it differently. It's not that they try to have special preference when they go for pindapat. Ultimately, for those who have the real understanding, they will accord and flow. But in this particular case, because they have their conditioning from the past, means when they are monk, they understand those people who are poor and from very difficult beginnings. You look at Kāsapa. Even he was born into a very wealthy family. Then later on, the parents want to marry him, pair him up. Out of Philippine, he told the parent, unless you can find a lady like that, I will marry, otherwise I won't. Then there's another family, the lady also don't want to marry unless you can find a man like that. Well, then the two painting match. So they got no choice but to marry. So out of respect for the parent, they got married. But they, although sleep together, but they never really break the precept of Abrahmacharya. Then wait till until Mahakasapa's parent pass away. Then they decide to renounce and go separate way. Then you know what happened? No? He donated all his wealth to all his worker, employee. Then after that, when they separate, Mahakasapa say, I walk east, you walk west. The two never walk together. But finally, they end up becoming Sakyamuni's disciple. One joined the Sangha, the other one joined the Bhikkhuni order. And the strange thing is, when he decide to renounce, they make him very nice robe. Very fine material robe. But Kāsapa very funny. He doesn't want that robe. He go and collect all those dead corpses, all the old dresses, and he make his own robe. Then he offer this robe to who? He met Sakyamuni Buddha. He offered it to him.
Then because his style is like that one, he like to dress like a true monk, and he is famous for Dutanga practice. You know what is Dutanga practice? Austere type of practices. He's very strict one, very severe one. He like to stay out in the what they call forest, then in harsh weather condition. Means they go for tudong. In Thailand they call tudong. You know what is tudong? Dutanga. Means for the 3 months, instead of staying in a very nice place for your rains retreat, with everything taken care of, they will go and do tutanga or tudong. So they travel, they walk. Then wherever, they will just make do and they will just meditate. Then they will continue their journey. And sometimes this tudong, they have this resolve and determination. They travel very far. I know of this monk Ajahn Ganha. How many of you know him? He is a very, very beautiful monk. He is really like the Maitreya Buddha, loving Buddha. He every time smiles. You see him, he will always speak in Thai. He smiles and really like a loving Buddha. He always say Chai Di, Chai Sabai, Sabai. Chai is mind. Di is good mind. Sabai, Sabai is happy mind, beautiful mind. So he had a lot of joy. And every Vasa, he will go to Dongan. Sometimes he will walk the length and breadth of Thailand. Then certain year he will come down to Malaysia all the way to Singapore and walk back. So these are the austere practice. And because Kasapa is like that, that's why he liked to go and do his arms round, pindapat from all the less affordable people, the more poor villages, people who are not so well off, because he believed this is the way to give them condition, opportunity to come out of their poverty, so that they can have this opportunity to develop all this. Then for Subhati, I believe he is the opposite, because he must have come from a family that has high, what they call, respect for the noble ones, or for the, they call it the one with the, means you have your parami to be born into that type of caste system or whatever. They call it the Brahmin, or Kshatriyas. So these are the ones that they have very high respect for. Then they believe it's also part of your cultivation, your good karma and all things for you to have such condition. So he is a person who advocate that type of condition. That's why he prefer to do his arms round from the wealthy and the rich. But it doesn't mean that they discriminate. But here, the Buddha's intention is very good. Yeah, he doesn't want this to become like misunderstood by the cultivator. So that's why he get hold of these two, and he try to like explain to them. Although he said in the sutta, Xuanhua used the word scold them. No, I don't think scold them. I think it's just a very polite way of reprimanding. Just to tell them, if you do this, it can create misunderstanding. Because people will feel very funny. How come both are arahant, both are disciple of the Buddha, both also have different way of doing things. But what is more important is the understanding behind what you do. It's not to follow what people do. It's just like we always said, if you
walk like the Buddha, sit like the Buddha, eat like the Buddha, act like the Buddha, you are not going to become the Buddha. Understand? So you follow one Mahakasapa, go and pindapat or have arms around with the poor people, it doesn't mean you can be like him. Understand? So these are doing, following without understanding. When you understand their background, you will understand. That's why Dhamma is not rigid. So this particular case, my explanation, like I explained just now, is slightly different from what Shenhua has explained. Anyway, these are not so important. Then we move on. So far, you got any question or? Or anything you want to share? Don't have, Don't have, we go on, We still got quite a bit of time. Okay, second, the Buddha, actually not the word scolded, The Buddha will not scold, Maybe reprimand in a very gentle way, Mahakasapa. They call Great Kasapa, it's actually Mahakasapa. Because in his arduous practice of asceticism, this asceticism is what they call austere practice, or they call it Dutanga practice. Means like ascetic, they are very austere in their cultivation. He not only eat just one meal a day, but he beg only from the poor. His thought was, these people are poor because in former life they did not foster merits and virtue. They did not do good deeds when they had money. And so in this life they are poor. I will help them out of their predicament by enabling them to plant blessings before the Triple Gem. So next life they will be wealthy and honored. The poorer the house, the more he goes for alms there. Even to the point that the poor people took the food out of their own bowl in order to have an offering for him. I believe that because, he used the word Patriarch Kasapa, he's the first patriarch after Sakyamuni, cultivated asceticism, he wanted to undergo suffering and did not want to eat good food. He knew how people with money eat and did not want to eat well himself. There is a Chinese proverb which said, to be sparing with clothing increases life. To be sparing with food increases blessing. Got Mandarin word. Got such Mandarin word. Hello, you are? Pamasuri must have heard. You check and see what is Sonoha, the Mandarin, what did they write? So? Oh, you found it, huh? Read it, read it. Wrong, read out the Mandarin.
减衣增福
哦、oh,，OK，
减食增寿
哦、oh,，OK，correct，the translation is correct，So 减衣啊 means to be sparing in your clothing 啊、，increase your life ，then to be sparing in your food ，increase your blessing ，So there's a Mandarin saying Mahakasapa was 120 years old when he took refuge. When he took refuge with the Buddha, he was 320 years old. Hai Maya. So old? I don't think so. He met him when he was quite old, but not 120. 120 years old is the normal life of the disciple. Most of the disciple. But sometimes, it may be possible, no? Because the Mahayana believe, Mahakasapa haven't died, He's still in the Himalayas, Ah, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Because I got one teacher. This one for your own info, yeah. Don't go and simply tell people. He used to tell me, he met one 600 years old one from the Himalayas. During the year 1970 something, or that time he was 35 years old. 35 years old. Now he is 80 years old. 55 years ago. 1960, yeah. Yeah, 1960. He met the one who taught him meditation up there in the astro. That one was 600 years old from the Himalayas. You may think fairy tale. So there are people who live very long. But that one didn't come physically. He came through his astral form. And he came to him, talked to him, and instructed him. That's why he tell me, if no more worldly guide, they may send one astral guide. But later on, 20 years later, when I met him again, I told him, no more. Ever since that year, no more until now. No worldly, no astral, no more. Until today, no more. So that was what he told me. So it's up to you to whether believe you or don't believe me. But there are people who live very long, very, very long. So let's assume the Mahayana Sutta here, they must have got it somewhere. They must have these facts based on some form of record. Life after life, he has been frugal. You know the meaning frugal, huh? Means don't simply waste. And in this life, because he did not like to eat rich food, he only begged from the poor. Just the opposite of Subhati. Both of those, he used the word methods, are extreme and not in accordance with the middle way. And it is for this reason that the Surangama Sutta said that the Buddha, he used the word scold them, should be reprimand them and call them arahat. Oh, you see, arahat no, arahat no. So I think what Shen Hua is trying to tell you is, as an arahat, although you enlightened, no more delusion, but your understanding of the full cultivation is still, because to him, this is still duality, understand? But the middle path is the meaning deeper. It's not about this. This doesn't mean that the two extreme. You see, the two extreme, Sakyamuni, when he proclaimed the Four Noble Truths, he started off by saying this statement. These two extremes must be avoided by all means. What is the first extreme? Self-mortification. Heard of this? Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon after he became enlightened, when he met the five ascetic, when he started proclaiming this Dhamma. His opening statement is avoid the two extremes. First is self-mortification. Then the second one is sensual indulgence. Because he himself went through the 6 years he learned. He went into austere practice. That's why self-mortification. He endured and in a way go through a lot of very severe type of austere type of practice. Actually, they have this wrong view. They thought if you develop all this suffering or self-mortification, you torture your body. It means you are paying back your karma. Until you have finally paid off all your bad karma, they believe, then only you can become enlightened. But later on, Sakyamuni realized it's not like that one. You need to have a reasonable healthy body, for you to strive on heedfulness. Then it is not through self-mortification that you can develop the cultivation. So because of that, the two extreme comes about. So self-mortification and sensual indulgence, these are two that will lead to downfall, wrong view. So in cultivation, you have to tread the middle path. Middle path means you must not neglect your body. That's why the body has its need. When it needs food, you have to take. That's why he went back to take food. Then that last night, before he sat underneath the Bodhi tree that day, he received this special offering from Sujata, the milk rice. That's how with that food, with that body that is in that health, and the mind that has the training and the clarity, he was able to penetrate and break free. Then because of that, the Buddha knew, you cannot deludedly believe what people tell you. That's why you have to develop your own investigative understanding. So his advice is avoid the two extreme. So here Xuan Hua quote that these two has debate. To me is no, because they are arahant. They have their, like I explained just now, they have their character. So it is their way of doing things, and they like to do things that way. So just like any other living being, if you got certain thing that you like, could be some conditioning from the past. Even after you have become, I use the word, the form and mind has become enlightened, connected, but the form and mind still got what that form and mind like to do, preference. So that form and mind is different, understand? You can use it to live life the way you want to use it, but without delusion, without without any what they call craving, delusion and craving. It's not a craving. It's something he like to do, understand? But he is not attached to it. Or she is not attached to it, or he doesn't crave for it. It's just his preference, and when there is condition to do, he will do one. No. This is not latent tendency. Totally different. This is the thing that the form of mind like to do one, because it's a conditioning, understand that, from the past. Like their style, their way of cultivating, their way of understanding things, and their way of doing things. That's why you remember what I used to explain to you. Every living being, when you come, you are different because of your past, your conditioning. The way you go about developing your skill, your understanding. It's just like people who are talented in certain way, when they come, they will be attracted to this type of musical instrument or this type of talent that they have already from the past developed. So that's why that monk, you remember? When Sariputta asked him to contemplate on death, he cannot meditate. This is boring. And then the Buddha knew. Then the Buddha can see his past life. For 500 life, he has been a goldsmith's son. So the Buddha gave him a golden Buddha. The moment he received the golden Buddha as an object of meditation, he can meditate so well. His saddha-virya came. Then at the point of time when he was having that intense meditation, when he starts to develop all the samadhi, sati samadhi, and all the faith, saddha-virya, sati samadhi, when the mind was ready, the Buddha actually, through his psychic, he knew spiritual benefit. He caused the golden Buddha to melt.
The moment it melt, this monk awakened and become an arahant straight away. Yeah. He said, such precious metal like gold can just melt like that. Then what more about the phenomenal world, condition arising world, is even more fragile than this. That's why he straight away awakened to the three characteristics. Yeah. Then different monks, they have different character and parami or cultivation from the past. That's why everyone is different. So it's, I don't call it a latent tendency, because it is a, they call sequana. No. Habitual tendency is you do without awareness one, you do without mindfulness one, understand? But this one is something that they like to do, their sequana. It's just like I like to eat hami falampo, okay? That is what I like to eat. But it doesn't mean if there is no hami falampo, I will be miserable. No such thing. But this is my sequana. If I smell, then got condition, then I will go and order. You got condition. You got no condition. If people eat vegetarian, no problem. It's just like when I was in Singapore. They want to take me for dinner. We had that night talk. Lunch and dinner. So they asked me, Ratio, what food you prefer? I said, don't worry about me. More about you all. Oh, then they reply. They're very happy. You know. He said, okay, we take you to vegetarian. Because two out of the three is vegetarian. So luckily I didn't see how he fell off. So we went and have vegetarian. Then at night, another three or four join. This one like to eat tua cha one, the good food one. Then they want to take me to a Western food. Then after we reach there, these three other old men, he said, this one Western food, or bak, or yok, we go tua cha, that's special. Oh, then we went to that restaurant. You ask my wife. they like to eat the steamed fish and all those things. So that's why I just tell them, whatever that is conducive for you all, don't worry about me, because I'm very simple. Anything also I can eat. But these are the what they call sequan. I call it sequan, but it's not a habitual tendency that is done deludedly, understand? Where habitual tendency make you heedless, understand? This one is not habit. This one is something your nature like, understand? Like I like certain type of old Mandarin song, like Wang Si Zhi Neng Hui. I listen, I will like. Then Sing Ching, I listen, I will like. Understand? I like song, that type of Heart Sutta or Sanskrit version, his nature straight away taking on. Because you have that, what they call affinity with those things. Then some with Pali chanting. Some Mahayana chanting. Some maybe Thai chanting. Then some Burmese one. Or Sri Lanka one. You ask Ingby, he will tell you Sri Lanka one with Pali chanting. So everyone is different. So to me, this one, they are already arahant. They got no more delusion. They don't behave like what Master Sun Hua think they will behave. No. Okay? So that's the sharing that I want you all to understand. Okay, we go on. Just when here, Shen Hua used this word, the Tathagata, the world-honored one, had abolished or reprimanded Subhati and Mahakasapa as arahats whose minds are not equable. Means to them, arahan is not the full perfection and cultivation as yet, although no more ignorant. Means they have not perfected the practices. They are enlightened, but they are not fully enlightened. So that is where the difference is. Then we read on. Then he said, he, Ananda, decided that throughout the Pindapat, he would pay no attention to whether his donor was clean or unclean, reputable, whether it's from the Kshatriyas, Kshatriyas, the highest one among the caste system, or the low, Chandalas. He would practice equal compassion rather than seek out the mean and lowly, and in that way enable all living beings alike to obtain measureless merit. The Buddha's impartiality in arms round is indicated by the strict door-to-door sequence he followed. When he finished his arms round at one house, he went for arms round at the one beside it, and so forth, on to the next. After he had finished his sequential arms round, he returned to the Jeta Grove in the gardens of the benefactors of orphan and solitary, where he ate the food, put away his robe and bath, and washed his feet. The Buddha traveled the road barefooted. So after he returned and had eaten, he washed his feet. Then he arranged his seat and sat down. When the arms round was finished, the food eaten, his robe and bowl and bath stored, and his feet clean. After this, basic routine has been attended to. The Buddha then arranged his seat and sat down. This does not mean that he piled pillow beneath and pillow behind, pillow over, and then eased himself into a plush couch like some people do. It means he make a gesture or two, straighten a mat, tidy and sit a bit, and then sat down. Real mat prajna was expressed in the Buddha's performance of the daily routine. That is not to say the emphasis was placed on the performance itself to announce I cultivate. Rather, if one understands Dhamma, everywhere is Dhamma, everywhere is cultivation. That's why cultivation can be done anywhere, any place, any time in the midst of life. That is not true of one who affects the manner of an experienced cultivator declaring, look at me, I just sat here, thus. Whereas the next minute finds him fidgeting, screaming, and talking a mile a minute. People who cultivate the way seldom talk, do not talk so much. If you do, you will hinder others' cultivation as well as your own. In a place where the Sangha lives, one cannot hear the sound of a single voice. If conversation is necessary, it is carried on in very low tone, so as not to disturb others. People who wish to use effort in cultivating the way or cultivation of the way should study the Buddha and in every movement, every gesture, avoid obstructing others. So this is just a guideline. Okay, we have finished the preliminary, chapter 1. And now we go to serious matter, chapter 2. Now only the real Surangama Sutta start. Diamond Sutta, Surangama, Diamond Sutta starts. Okay, maybe we can have some Q&A or sharing. We will stop here. The next chapter, you all can go back and read a bit. So that when you come, at least you are more prepared. Then we hope to engage in more Dhamma discussion after this. Okay, so far, any questions? Or you want to share anything? Anybody got anything to ask? Don't have.
About the chapter 1, huh? So far, any question or anything that you need me to clarify? Huh? Yes, yeah, yeah. Ah, pass the mic. Yes, which
where
part?
It says the Buddha was delivered from the rib of
mother. This one is the Mahayana's version. The Theravada's version is he delivered it standing. Theravada version. Yeah? You heard of it? The Sala, the 2-3, the Sala plan. Then after that, 7 steps. But Mahayana want to follow the Christian, Adam's rib. Is there a story about the rib one? Yeah, I mean, they copy. Or I don't know who copy. Is there a story about the rib one, Christianity? Eve, from the rib of who? Adam. Took a rib from Adam. Then created Eve. That's why. But this Mahayana Sutta says he was born from the rib. Anyway, it's not important. More important is the teaching. Because there are some people who dwell into even the question of, was the Buddha really born as a prince? And sometimes they say, actually the Buddha's father, who is the king, he's the king of a very small kingdom. And all. To me, these are not important. The more important one is the teaching. Then they try to, I don't know, maybe they have their own understanding and their own way of seeing things. But to me, if you bring up certain things that bring about more argument and misunderstanding, try not to get anything to do with it. Just forget about it. Not important at all. We're supposed to train our mind to be heedful, try on with heedfulness to develop the understanding of his teaching. So make that our focus. That's why for me, whether all those background history or story about the Buddha's life before he became enlightened, to me is not important. Whether true or not, correctly recorded or not, more important is that teaching came into this world, and that is the teaching that if you develop the cultivation and understanding of it, you will come to a great realization. Then you will have a lot of faith in the Buddha and gratitude towards him. And such teaching is so wonderful. It can really, really liberate living beings' mind and transform living beings into great beings. Beings that truly has great blessings, great wisdom and great understanding. They can transform you into noble ones or enlightened ones. So this is the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. This chapter 1 is mainly more on story, a lot of story. But to me, it is the Mahayana way of presenting their teaching. So like I started earlier on, Diamond Sutta don't have real Dhamma teaching. It only tell you how to cultivate. You have to develop the type of cultivation until you understand that there is nobody inside there, and there is no being to save. Means the cultivation must reach a point of no mark. No mark. Not even a mark of a self or a being to be saved, or Dhamma. Any of these are just mark. And when there is a mark, you cannot penetrate the true teaching, the true cultivation. And to go the way of Sama Sambuddhahood, Bodhisattva way, you have to cultivate until no mark. Otherwise, you are still far away from that realization, that perfection. So this Diamond Sutta is a very unique but very profound sutta. Later on, when we combine the Six Patriarch Sutta, also very interesting. Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. That one is Sunday class, Wu Ping Jing Sir. That one got more dialogue, winning. This one later on also, I believe, there are quite a bit of important chapters that can explain to you very deeply and profoundly about the cultivation and the teaching. Okay, anything else that you all, polite, pass the mic to her, sadhu. 在后面。Okay, so the question is, Polai want to know, can you explain more clearly about the cultivation without mark? This is the Mahayana way of delivering the Diamond Sutta. All of our cultivation since the beginning of our sharing is all mainly based on what? Theravada tradition, remember? Theravada tradition. So what is Theravada tradition? What is Theravada tradition? We have living being, human being, five aggregate of form and mind. Then what happened after that? The Buddha continued and teach you the three characteristics. Then he say, these three universal characteristics is common to all phenomena in this universe. May it be physical, mental, or nature's phenomena. That's why you have these three universal characteristics are impermanent. If you grasp, cling, and hold, suffering will arise. Then the last one is because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent and changing entity. That's why it is not something that you can call, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. That's what anatta is all about. Not a permanent and changing entity that you can cling onto, grasp onto, and hold onto, and say, this is me, eternally. And because they are conditioned arising, they are empty, because they arise due to condition, they cease due to condition. As real as can be, it is only within the moment. And moment to moment life passes by, what are you doing? That's why you are not mindful, you are not heedful, then you will be deluded by what arises within the moment. And how stable is the moment? How real is the moment? Every moment when it arises, it just slips away. As real it can be, is only within the moment. And split second is dead and gone. Why can't you see it's impermanent? It's unreality. It's empty nature. So if you fail to penetrate the moment, you can never penetrate the true Dhamma. And within the moment, there is no mark. The mark comes from the mind, the mundane mind, conditioned arising mind, that cling, grasp, and hold. That's how the mark of self, self-delusion, sakkarity is a mark. Understand? The mark of we vow to save the limitless living being is a mark. Understand? Living being, we think there is living being. We think we are real. We think there is such thing as living being, human being, our loved ones. then we also hold on to the mark of Dhamma Anusara. There is the Dhamma, the teaching, the Buddha Dhamma. If you hold on to all this, these are mark. Then when you cultivate with this, you are restricted. That's why the five aggregates of form and mind, they create marks everywhere through concept, words and idea. As far as Theravada is concerned, because they follow what Sun Siu initially cultivated, you remember? Under the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, or the Huining Six Patriarch Sutta, before he became the Sixth Patriarch, the Fifth Patriarch Temple, there was a monk who was the chief disciple of the Fifth Patriarch, Sun Siu. He was following basically the Theravada tradition of cultivation. To him, he doesn't have the understanding of what the true mind is, the true nature is. The true mind and the true nature that is without anything. He cling on to that mindfulness, that awareness, that sati, that pure mind, the true mind. But he doesn't understand what it is. To him, he thought this mind, which is the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind, you have to purify it. He followed the advice of the Buddha, avoid all evil, do good, purify this mind. So he thought, if he continued to train himself to be mindful, to be heedful, so that he can avoid all those evil, then purify his mind and develop all the wholesomeness, then he will become enlightened. Yeah. That's why he come out with this poem. He said, our body is like a Bohi tree. Yeah? Bohi stands for enlightenment. It's like a tree of enlightenment. And he is not wrong. Because this body, the form and mind, like the Buddha said, under one of the Dhammapada verse, is it within this phantom body, along with perception and thought and mindfulness, I proclaim the world, the cause of the arising of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that leads to the cessation of this world, which is the Four Noble Truths. Yeah. That's why Sun Siu also knew, he said, this body is like a Bohi tree. It's like a tree of enlightenment. If you cultivate using this form of mind, it has the four foundation of mindfulness within here. Kaya nupasana, the body, kaya is there. Vedana nupasana, feeling is within. Citta nupasana, consciousness and its content is within. Then Dhamma nupasana is also within part of this form of mind. So the four foundations are here. That's why this is the only way for the purification of being. So he cultivates with this type of Dhamma, this type of understanding, which is holding on to a mark. Then he said, our mind is like a mirror bright on a stand, because he keep on seeing this mind as something that is reflecting. Understand? They understand because he can hold on to this mind, understand? Like it's something is holding it, understand? Like there is a person who use this mind, who hold on to this mind. That's why he said, polish until it shine, so that no dust can align. Means the mindfulness is very, very clear until it shine, so that no dust can align. Dust means what? Any defilement, he will just wipe it off. Yeah. So to him, when there is no dust, when it's always pure, then that to him is enlightenment. Yeah. But he failed to understand the true mind, the true nature. That's why later on, the fifth patriarch told him, he said, you are at the gate of enlightenment, but you don't know how how to go in. You don't know what the thing is. So he gave him a second chance, actually, the fifth patriarch. Based on what I have explained to you, you go back and write me another stanza. If you can prove that you have realized that thing, then I will hand over the patriarchship to you. But since you just couldn't do it, because he was trapped at the mind level, he was holding on to so many things. So these are mark, understand not? The mark of a self-cultivating, the mark of living being to be saved, the mark of the Dhamma that he has to use to cultivate and all those things. And everything to him is surreal. Whereas Huining, who has already penetrated, where he was born without the mundane mind, he straight away knew, since you haven't penetrated. Because how can you live life when you constantly have to be aware, understand not? Means you don't develop wisdom. If you have wisdom, you don't have to be aware. Awareness is natural. Heedfulness is natural because the wisdom will make you peaceful. It's not the effort that constantly wants to practice and become pure. So that constant practice is the thought, is the mind. That doing is by a thought, is another mark. So all this, you cannot penetrate. So because of that, Huining, he wrote another poem. And the moment you heard his poem, you know, Chen Xiu is no match for him, completely no match for him. He straight away start with explaining to Chen Xiu that Pu Ti Peng Wu Su, Pu Ti is enlightenment. Enlightenment is not a tree, not even the Bodhi tree, even though Bodhi stands for enlightenment, because the Buddha sat underneath the Bodhi tree and become enlightened. So they call it the tree of enlightenment. But Bodhi is not a tree, although they call it Bodhi tree. That's why he said, Pu Ti Peng Wu Su. Then he point out to Chen Xiu, the mind that you talk about is not the true mind. That is the mundane mind, he said. That's why he said, Ming Jing Yi Fei Tai. The mirror bright understand is not the true mind. That is your mundane mind, conditioned arising mind. Then he said, originally, that nature, there is nothing. I said, no. 本来无一物，何处惹尘埃? Then where can the dust alight? Because there is nothing for it to hold or give meaning or cling or grasp. That's why no mark, understand? Where that true nature, like I explained to you, cannot come out, understand? There is nobody inside. There is no word, nothing. It's the unborn. That's why it's the eternal life. Because it's the unborn, it never get old, never get sick, and never die. And there is nobody inside. Understand? That's why this one cannot come out and live. Understand? But it's not a being. Understand? It's not an entity. And this one, you can connect back. The form and mind, when it sees, it can realize that. But it is from this that the whole creation start. Come out. So Chen Xiu, because he failed to understand, he's stuck at the Theravada level. That's why all this cultivation has a mark on somebody doing merit, somebody cultivating to become perfect, to become enlightened and all those things. But the moment you move into the Bodhisattva way, it's completely different. They talk about the true mind, the true nature, the Buddha nature, which is beyond all of the form and mind, which has got nothing to do with the world, the conditioned world. That's why the Buddha said, if it says not because of the unconditioned, which is Nibbana, escape from the conditioned world is impossible. That's why in the Heart Sutta is mentioned, in true emptiness, there is no Four Noble Truths. There is no old age, sickness, and death. everything ceased to be. Yeah. There is no living being. No one born, no one die, no one sick. No old age, no sickness and no death. So within true emptiness is wonderful existence. When you penetrate true emptiness, when you develop the understanding and wisdom and realize that they are all empty because of the universal characteristic, that wisdom transforms the form and mind. That's why that form and mind no longer deluded, become wonderful, can live life, can be the moment to understand what life is, then to truly live, to experience all of the wonders and beauties of life within moment to moment. And this is what the teaching is all about, without mark. So when you cultivate until there is nobody inside, this form of mind, like I explained, is for you to use, karmically conditioned as well. Then you use this to cultivate, to perfect your perfection, but there is nobody. But even though you know there is nobody, but within the conditioned world, it has another set of rules, understand not? Another set of nature's law. That's why there is a law of karma. There is this duty that you have to perform. Remember the four great qualities of the enlightened being? The first one is of good conduct. Then of upright conduct. Then of wise conduct. The last one is what? Of dutiful conduct. They are very responsible. They know their duty very well. Means this form of mind, understand? This form of mind is upright. This form of mind is has good conduct. Then this form of mind has wisdom because it's connected to the nature. Then this form of mind performs its duty, understand? This is what the teaching is all about. So you know there is this duty that you have to perform in accordance with all these nature's law, especially the law of karma and the law of the mind and the law of Dhamma, the three spiritual law. So when you understand all this, you will not violate them, manasana. You will not be heedless anymore. You will accord and flow, and you will know what to do, even though not real. But there is such thing as life, manasana. There is such thing as loved ones. There is such thing as life is meaningful, wonderful, even though moment to moment, split second is the angle, split second is the angle. But within the moment, within the condition arising world, this form and mind can live. Because there is no more delusion. That's why this one, no longer deluded, doesn't have to suffer. Then life becomes different, meaningful, worthwhile. Then it can do its duty, it can develop its own cultivation and understanding and perfection. Then from there it will continue to evolve until the final realization of Sammasambuddhahood, which is the oneness nature. Then the whole of the understanding is within the embodiment of this oneness, which is the source of all things. From there, that's why the Buddha is the fully enlightened one, omniscient. You know what is omniscient and omnipresent? Means whatever that can be known, that nature can know. Because from there, everything arises. That's why scientists also come to know. There is such thing as a singularity, which is the Buddha nature. From that singularity, everything come, all creation come. And because from that singularity, everything come, whatever that is connected back to this singularity, the singularity will understand. Because from here, everything comes. Yeah. So, they try to develop the unified theory to understand all this. Because when they have this, all this nature's law theory unified together and understand and trace back to the source, then they will understand creation. That's why they use the word, they will understand the mind of God. Yeah. How God think. Actually, God is nothing else but that final nature, the oneness nature, the source of all things, the singularity. Okay? Yeah. Thank you for the question. Very good. Sadhu. It's also inside one of the chapter about Makon. Later on, we will go through again. Last time, at the beginning, you were not around. We already went through a review of the 32 chapter earlier on. So now, there is condition for this teaching to come about again. So this question of a mark and no mark is very important. So when you cultivate with any mark, you will be limited. Not to say you cannot penetrate the Dhamma. You can, but you cannot go beyond, because wherever there is a mark, there is a holding back. Means you cannot perfect that type of perfection that is without mark. So just now, this one is for sharing. I went with my wife for dinner just now. At first it was raining. Then she said, halfway through, she said, no more rain. Then we came out after dinner. Then I say, you sure no more rain? He said, no mark. Wow, I say, penetrate rain, no mark. Because he saw the pool of water. Normally got raindrop, you can see the thing, tick 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 there. He said, no mark. He used the word no mark. Oh, I say, sadhu. I say, wow, no mark already. Diamond Sutta Center already, no mark. So that's how he know. No more rain. Got rain means got mark. So there are causes and conditions behind all this arising. So that's why when the mind is still, there is nothing fall on it. There is no mark. But the moment you perceive it, the mark rise. Every moment of perception is a mark. Every moment of knowing is a mark. That's why the Wu Liang Shou Jing, the Amitabha Sutta, the Limitless Age Sutta, Wu Liang Shou Jing, oh, very good, all right? So Zi Zhang, Fan Nao Zhang, all these are mark. So Zi means whatever you come to know is a mark, is a hindrance, is a hindrance to Dhamma cultivation. Then any type of worry, anxiety, fear, fan nao, suffering, is an obstruction. That's why so zi zhang, fan nao zhang. So these two words actually cover all of your suffering, all your karmic obstruction, all your Dhamma obstruction. That's why when you understand these two type of obstruction, you will know how to cultivate. You don't try to know. That's why I say when you meditate, don't try to know. Just silent, relax, aware, maintain awareness. It will awaken, because it's not a knowledge. You cannot know. The knowing is the thought, knowledge. But wisdom is an awakening. The direct seeing, the nature insight into it without thought, just awaken. It just understand. But if you need to think about it, or through Dhamma theory, try to understand it, that one is knowledge, thought-based. You cannot penetrate. Okay? We better end. Sorry. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Have taken about 10 minutes extra. We will do the sharing of merits with the devas. Akasatta chabumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa jarang rakantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share this merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang ho tu sugita hontunya teyo. Idang menya tinang ho tu sugita hontunya teyo. Idang menya tinang ho tu sugita hontunya teyo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives and all those who can receive them, and may they all too be well and happy always. We will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo vasadukalena sasa sampati heto cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the ruler, be righteous. Okay, you make your aspiration. Itmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya. By the grace of these merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we end.